Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, November 10th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me. Listen, I loves me some Mistress Catherine, and I'm not ashamed to admit it either.
She's a gem. She's a gem, Bannister. She's unbelievable.
And I totally agree, but I'm not Bannister. And you know what? From the looks of the download numbers from last week's podcast featuring the Divine Mistress, it appears you dig her big time too. So when we ran out of time last week, and I asked her to come back this week to dispense even more of her signature sex education, she was gracious enough to say yes. Lucky for me, Catherine didn't even make me beg or grovel, though God knows I surely would have.
This is outrageous.
You can say that again. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation, did you? Well, don't worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the search function in the header, type in podcast number 243, and faster than you can say pro-dom, you'll be taken to paradise. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
That is impossible.
No, it's not. Try it. And Catherine encourages you to visit her on her personal website at pleasemistresscatherine.com. Today's podcast is once again brought to you by the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack. For those of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It's phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that?
I find that story intensely moving.
I knew you would. And ladies, here's a tip. This is the perfect gift for your man. You know how I keep telling you about the mutual joys and the important information shared when a couple masturbates together, right? Well, this is the ideal masturbation toy for him. Check it out and see for yourself. I know you will agree, nothing beats a Fleshlight. Look for the banner in the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com. Visit them. I'm telling you, you will be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show.
Catherine, welcome back, and thank you again for spending more time with us.
My pleasure.
I still got a smile on my face from last week, don't you know?
Wow.
I know. You have
glad
that
you
effect.
Found our conversation. Yes, I'm often putting smiles on men's faces. So.
So let's pick up where we left off last week. We were talking about your sex positive credo.
Mm-hmm.
And you are a pro-dom.
Mm-hmm.
Would you then identify as a sex worker?
Absolutely.
No kidding. Good for you.
Yeah, it's more than a little bit political. I think it's obvious of I don't have any personal fear around being associated within the sex industry.
Right.
But I also think that it's an important part of just being kind of out of...
Right.
Any time that a minority spends too much time trying to say, well, I'm doing this, but I'm not one of them, then you're making yourself more of a target.
Right.
More difficult to offend.
I so agree. I really so agree.
Yeah, and I think that even though there's the sex worker, and, you know, especially if you're an American, the sex is what's going to catch your eye, but the important other half of that is worker.
Yes. We talked about this briefly last week. I mean, it is work. I mean, it might be joyful work, and you might be very good at it, but it's still work.
Yes.
And
it is. The time that I get to spend with my playmates, it doesn't actually feel like work. I'll be honest, but that's because I'm being true to my sexuality and my interest as a person. But there's the stuff that goes around that, of getting that person to my space, like maintaining the website and responding to emails and responding to calls. And, you know, not everyone that I get calls from is necessarily someone that I really want to talk to. So advertising, just all of that, doing laundry, which I also do not do leathered up, as we discussed last time. But yeah, that is still, there's other things that are just the menial parts of any other kind of job.
Good. So in light of that, since we're going to be talking about your job this week, let's find out about some of the games that you play. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what some of the things... you have a long list on your website.
Yes, I am a kinky bitch, so yes, there's a lot of things out there that I enjoy.
I'm looking to hear a little bit of about some of these. Foot and leg workshop, I think we probably know what that means, but how does it play itself out in your play?
You know, it's completely coincidental, but just as you were asking that, I took my shoes off.
I know.
And I almost said something when your puppy was in here and started to kind of, was just sort of nosing my foot of, my feet are more of an erogenous zone for me than my breasts.
No kidding.
So, yeah, that's, foot fetish is something that I very much enjoy. There's a whole gallery devoted to it on the website because I really like playing with foot boys. And beyond just the activity itself is that most men who are into feet are sensualist, that there's an intrinsic appreciation of the female form in variety, the variety of female form, not just a specific form. I'm told that I have very sexy, wrinkly soles, that's a specific fetish for some of the foot boys, though, just like some men like big breasts, some men like small breasts, there's different shape preferences. Foot fetish boys are into different types of feet, so I have very well-shaped toes and nice, wrinkly soles, and they really like getting attention. So it's, I think that it honestly, even though foot fetish is one of the more common fetishes out there, I think it is still, at this point, as much play as I've done, it's always a little bit of a mystery to me of where that really stems from for people. You know, if this was Victorian era, then I could see there being more of a fascination because it's the one slightly exposed part of a woman's body.
Exactly that.
But, you know, women walk around barefoot now and with, you know, skirts that are barely covering their bum, so it's not a reaction to too much covering.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. But, you know, we continue in our society to fetishize feet by, you know, putting them in all kinds of outrageous shoes that are very expensive.
Very expensive and almost never comfortable.
And it's a very fascinating kind of thing, how we do that. Ourselves,
people are so really fascinated, and there's the adoration, so there's foot worship, and then there's other things that can be done with the feet, like trampling and kicking, that it's a sensation base, but it's also specifically enjoying that of my male partner. He very much likes the face smothering with feet, and I've had lots of playmates that are really into that, and of course, you know, having that on more sensitive bits on the body also feels very, very nice.
Speaking of which, CBT and NT, clue us in.
Oh, yes. Speaking of the things happening to the sensitive bits, the juicy pink bits, the happy buttons. The biggest problem I have with CBT and NT activities that I thoroughly adore, well, there's two things. One is that just the words cock and ball torture or nipple torture involve the word torture.
Yeah.
Which you're throwing that at someone who's just looking at exploring sensation play, and it's going to fall into the hell's no category because it just by its very nature sounds vicious. But and also, if they've spent any time on the interwebs looking at porn that involved people getting genital torture, it tends to be on the extreme end of the spectrum.
Right.
So you don't see a lot of porn out there that is the light playing around with sensation of I especially love to do this with doing genital torture on women, mm-hmm. is that getting someone to that point of extreme happiness by doing something very nice to their bits,
mm-hmm.
and then just taking it away, and mm-hmm. then saying, no, you don't get to cross the finish line.
Isn't
there will
that
be
amazing.
Bad
oh,
responses
cool.
if you cross the finish line. If you have an orgasm before I say that you can, and that in itself of giving someone
oh,
something
you
that
are
is
wicked.
Yeah, sometimes I'm a little bit evil, just a little bit. It's a bit evil. That in itself can be torture, or just mixing very, very pleasant sensations with just like a quick ball slap.
Yeah.
And that even though a ball slap, you know, that's not too hard wouldn't be jarring, if you're in a state of heightened awareness,
exactly
then
the point.
It's a totally different sensation.
Besides, I mean, if you're going down one path and you suddenly do something different,
yes,
that is an attention getter.
Yes.
So to speak.
I mean, we're still animals as much as we'd like to clothe ourselves and, uh-huh. and you know, do computer programming. It's still, we're intrinsically designed to respond to startling things,
yeah,
and
right.
and having someone, yeah. you know, doing something really nice to your penis and then someone just knocking you in the balls, that can be startling. Pleasantly so, really. And then you do that a few times, and then it's just that it unbalances people.
Right,
there's
right.
that, I really want to enjoy this, and I can't help but enjoy this. But I know, because she's being nice, any moment now something really mean is going to happen.
Well, you know, that's how I've taught people in my private practice how to expand their sexual repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, start with something that you find really very pleasurable, that's
mm-hmm.
always pleasurable to
mm-hmm.
you, and then add this other component.
Mm.
And, you know, you'll be surprised that, you know, that pleasure principle carries over into the, you know, like, oh, okay, you
yeah.
know? So it's kind of a curious, instead of
yeah.
starting out with something that is dubious or, you know, I'm doubtful or I don't know if that's going to work or not, start out with something that you know.
Yeah, just branch out a little bit.
Yeah.
Just branch. That tree metaphor, there's a Wiccan. Branch out a little bit. Also, I think that I like doing genital, more extreme genital sensation, and you know, the nipples can be included in that
right.
as well, because there are two parts of the body that people have already sexualized.
Yes.
So these are areas that, in addition to, I think that genitals
mm-hmm.
are designed to be able to experience a certain amount of intense sensation,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know if you're making silhouette romance, sweet, sweet love with your partner now as a species. I'm fairly certain that's not where we started
that's
out.
Right.
So going for an area that's already pretty sexualized, that has a higher threshold, is going to be much higher success rate in exploring more intense sensation
right.
than like an upper back flogging,
yeah.
which most people have not already eroticized their back to a good flogging.
Yeah.
So start with the interesting bits, as well as doing things to the pink bits are much less likely to show marks because,
ah.
you know, they're already rosy.
That's right. You have a game, Feminization. What's that? I've perished the thought.
Feminization? What, you intrigued? Really?
Oh,
no.
I love it. I love it.
Well, getting back to those, all the time and energy that's put into making beautiful, ridiculous, and often painful shoes of, yes, there's a lot of time and energy out there spent to the glory that is the feminine wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just think that it's an incredible crime that more men don't get to experience beauty that is the feminine, just the variety of patterns and textures and fabrics and shapes and... It's just, it's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
The way women dress
right.
has the potential to be absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
And it is something that very clearly is how we dress ourselves as a clear communication of who we are as people,
mm-hmm.
whether you're aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So folks who are trying to get in touch with their feminine side,
mm-hmm.
which you often see in folks that are trying to explore their submissive side
right,
and
right,
are
right, right.
male side gendered, is there's that interest in, I want to be a woman. I
mm-hmm.
want to take on the classic female role, and I want a costume for that.
Mm-hmm.
And even as a actress at one time, I would have been critical of the, you know, the costume makes the character
right.
style of performing.
Yeah.
This isn't something that's worthy of stage criticism.
Mm-hmm.
It's really very understandable. So there's that desire to be able to look in the mirror and see themselves dressed in women's clothing and have that external representation of something they're probably very much feeling on the inside of that feminine nature, that feminine interest of being taken, of being less powerful, and as conventional sexuality still insists on defining in most relationships that are hetero-based, of being the one that's being seduced, the one that doesn't have to do the initiating, the one that gets to lay back and just enjoy being worshipped and appreciated and complimented.
Is forced feminization a different level?
Forced feminization is basically someone who craves all of that, but isn't necessarily okay with the craving all of that. Forced feminization also tends to be more interested in slut role play.
Oh, interesting.
So if you have someone who's interested in feminization, totally consensual, they're probably going to be going for a more classy look, whereas someone who's into forced feminization, it's more the, I'm going to make you my slutty little bitch, and
oh,
I'm going
to
teach you what slutty little bitches do in the bedroom or underneath the bleachers or in the back alley.
Oh, cool.
It can be fun and naughty, and I loved playing dress-up. I have a background in costuming, so in addition to having skill at it, is something that I've always very much enjoyed. And then there's just the healthful of, feminine nature. We don't live in a society that really makes it easy for guys to grasp that, and anything that can bring someone within reach of that is a beautiful, fun activity.
Right.
It's very much one of those creating a safe space to explore
kind of
experiences.
Another is needle play. Talk us through that.
Why don't we just do a demo?
Okay. You know, the funny thing is, not too long ago, I was at a party with some of your friends, by the way.
My naughty, naughty friends.
I know, your naughty, naughty friends. And it was getting very late, and we were all lubricated, and there was a dungeon in the house.
It makes it sound like you were doing naked oil wrestling or something.
And there was a dungeon in the house, and you know, at certain point in the party, people gravitated toward the dungeon to do all these kind of things. And one of the people I had just met, she was into needle play, and I've always had this pathological fear of needles. I don't, you know,
a lot of people do.
I'm like swooning for a flu shot. Get me out of here. And so she said, well, I have just the cure for that, don't you know?
Oh, so helpful.
Yeah.
So very helpful.
And,
purely
and
altruistic.
And before you know it, I have my shirt off and she's, puncturing
making you a human pincushion.
It was very, very interesting. And it wasn't terrifying in any way, shape, or form. You know, because, first of all, the whole environment had changed. You know, it wasn't like in a doctor's office or, you know, waiting for a flu shot.
No, you weren't being treated like a number. It was very, very personable.
So
and
interesting. It was very interesting. And of course, I tweeted about it mercilessly for days afterwards,
and
about
probably
how she would stick me with sharp things.
Probably squeaked out a lot of people that are following me on Twitter of like, I really am not okay with the needle, and woo, I'm feeling a little lightheaded just reading this tweet. Woo! I actually was just doing some needle play yesterday evening with someone who's very experienced, and my partner Scarlett had joined me for that. And she is another one that, just pathological about, mostly syringes, though. So she's been in environments where there's been needle play going on. And just to clarify, so needle play is doing temporary piercings. The gauge typically, though I've seen some big needles, the gauge typically is considerably smaller than you would have for, like, having your blood drawn at the doctor or an IV needle. The gauges run the kind of, there's a wide range, but usually people who are just starting off, it's around like a 20 gauge, which is a pretty small needle. It's a little bit larger than something you'd sew with.
Yeah, right.
And so it's temporarily piercing the skin and various parts of the body, usually in an in-out pattern.
Right.
And the benefits to, the appeal for needle play is sometimes literally what you experience. It's the getting over a needle phobia.
Right.
That some people,
so it's therapeutic.
It can be. But I'd say the vast majority of people, they might be including that, but what they're really chasing is the huge endorphin high
right.
that is potential from that kind of play. And
right.
if you have the needle phobia, then you're probably getting an additional psychological like
right.
amp up.
Yeah.
But even if you don't, just mm-hmm. the endorphins that are released by your body to
yeah.
that kind of sensation
yeah.
are fairly fast and fairly extreme and
yeah.
can be really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get pretty high doing
yeah.
it.
It's funny because, you know, somebody would have said to me, you know, at the end of the evening, you will be doing this. I laughed. I was just, you know.
Are you
a
crazy
like,
person? That's never going to happen.
And
yet
I thought it was, like, way cool. I mean, it was really cool. I mean, I actually watched it
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, looking up at the ceiling and going.
Yes, so you don't pass out sitting in the chair at
yeah,
the doctor's
was,
office.
And I you know, my hat is off to Sam, who was my piercer. So she
oh.
was really sweetheart.
She popped your piercing cherry.
Yes, she did. She did.
First.
So let me ask you one more thing. Fantasy role play.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Fantasy role play, I do some of, but I think that for the vast majority of people that I play with, it's nice to just explore the DS dynamic, because for a lot of people, that is the fantasy fodder
right, right.
of just having someone.
And DS, you mean
dominant
and submissive.
Yeah.
Right. Good.
So just playing out those roles of the, I'm not really the boss of you, but for this specific
right.
ritualized period of time, I am going to be in charge of you. I'm going to tell you where your body should be positioned, when you should sit, when you should stand. I'm going to give you instructions. I'm going to make the call on what happens to you. And I play with safe words so people can communicate
right.
if things
right,
are
right,
getting
right.
too intense. But the handing over power to someone else, it's a very ritualized thing. And that a lot of fantasy role play is just a way of doing sort of the porn version of power exchange. It's very much what we talked about the last
right.
time of that excessive consciousness of power dynamic in day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
So something like a boss-secretary role play. So you have someone, a male, who has a large amount of power and responsibility, having a fantasy about his secretary, who makes, you know, not even a sixth of what he makes for a living. And has a certain amount of her own responsibilities and
mm-hmm.
control, but still considerably less, and
mm-hmm.
you oversee her. So having a fantasy about her...
The role reversal,
and that in a lot of a fantasy role play, there's a being caught at, that is where
oh,
the power comes from. So there's a little bit of non-consent play in it, in that you're caught at something. So
right.
like housewife catching you sniffing her panties.
Oh, how cool.
Teacher
yeah.
catching you, you know, masturbating at your desk. That it's a lot of the getting caught, which
uh-huh.
we all related to that as kids. It was
Absolutely.
All like chasing each other around and
Absolutely.
Getting caught. And that's where a lot of people's yeah. sexual fantasies kind of germinate
yeah.
and then you repress them and then they spring back up as these right. bright technicolor flowers take over our sex lives. So that fantasy role play can be a way of sort of trying out DS light, of
uh-huh.
working with conventional things that you might have very conventionally been thinking about and
mm-hmm.
masturbating over for a while, or you might very well have been blessed with having an experience that had that sort of questionable sexual energy, did or didn't play out,
mm-hmm.
but did kind of create that
mm-hmm.
that fodder.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and it can also be a really great place for people that are a little intimidated by the whole idea of, you know, the big leathered dominant and
mm-hmm.
the naked, vulnerable, submissive,
mm-hmm.
to kind of explore and play
mm-hmm.
around with power dynamic
mm-hmm.
in a safe, consensual way.
So one of your clients would come to you and say, you know, I've been thinking about this, or this has been part of my fantasy life, and I would like to, you know, realize it in some degree or another.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you guys then plan out a scenario, yes? Sort of
Not so much plan out,
yeah.
but as part of the pre-session interview, yes. I definitely like to know what people have been... Honestly, I ask them what they've been wanking to. Because that's like the truest test
right.
of like, what
right.
do you think about when
right.
you masturbate? If you're watching porn, what is it that you tend to flash to when
yes,
you cross the finish
absolutely.
Line? That these are the truisms of our sexuality, the sexuality we have when we
so
don't have
true.
To explain or apologize for it to anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
We can just roll with it. So, yes, what have you been wanking to? And a lot of that does have to do with, like, I have this fantasy. So even if they specifically come in for role play or not, it's I have this fantasy that I keep thinking about. And if we have the time and ability and the person is open to it, then I might spend a little bit of time actively conversing with them about what's going on within that fantasy and just bringing them an awareness to what those elements are. A lot of cases, they're power dynamic or mm-hmm. their vulnerability, or it's non-consent, fear-based stuff, age play related right. things, which also can go to right. a vulnerability of just a different variety. So knowing those elements and then building off of conversations of like limits and whether they can have marks or not, mm-hmm. not necessarily telling them what's going to happen.
Right,
again, those
yeah.
improv skills come in as the once I bring them into the scene, it's just I already have the plan.
Right.
And then we just go from there. And right. then everything is guided from that point forward
right.
by their reaction to whatever it is I've created for them. And right. some of them have gotten really very creative. I have very creative mind and theater background. They can get twisted really fast. But it's really the key element is finding out what's going on for the person. Why is it that they're so fixated on this specific fantasy, or they keep coming back to this kind of concept?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's imbalances in their own sexuality.
Right.
Sometimes it's really just it's the way their subconscious is trying to communicate to them that they
mm-hmm.
would like something.
Right.
It's the language that it's using. It's the symbolism that it's working from.
Right. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyhow. Do you play with both women and men?
Abso-frickin-lutely. well, actually, it's technically I play with both men and women.
Uh-huh.
But women are not, in this day and age, are not as likely to go to someone in the sex industry.
Uh-huh.
Women have no problem whatsoever to pay a massage therapist to just rub all over their body as long as it stays away from the sacred triangle.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't, it just, most women, it would never occur to them even to see a female sex
mm-hmm.
worker
mm-hmm.
Where there wouldn't be quite as much fear around physical safety
right.
of going to
right.
see a guy that
right.
outweighs you twice over,
yeah.
which is reasonable.
But,
yeah, that's just not. The one exception to that is women that have in some way or currently are associated with the sex industry, because
yeah.
then the stigma
right.
has been removed
right.
and then, of
right.
course, it would occur to them.
Yeah.
So
right.
usually when I get to play with women professionally, I definitely enjoy playing with women in my personal life.
Yeah.
Professionally, it's when I get to see couples.
Yeah. Interesting.
Which can be
cool
a lot
be.
Of fun.
So I'm assuming that it's that you don't play with every Tom, Dick, or Mary who approaches you. How do you discern between the ones that you encourage and the ones that you discourage?
It really comes down to if someone has made an effort and an intuition. So, as we talked about, I have a very lovely, incredibly informative website that
mm-hmm.
I've spent a
mm-hmm.
good deal of time and constantly
mm-hmm.
fine-tuning to say, this is how I like to schedule appointments,
mm-hmm.
this is what I enjoy to do, but I don't discuss things over the phone with people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's do your research, find out if we're
mm-hmm.
compatible by reading my site.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have folks give me a call, and that's when the other element comes in, which
right.
is, it's just sheer gut instinct,
right.
which I think that typically gets looked down on as not, you know, that valid a way of keeping oneself safe or
mm-hmm.
just, you
right.
know, basing a judgment.
Right.
But it's sort of a make or break thing for women in the industry of
mm-hmm.
I could probably mention a few things that I do that specifically what I'm looking for, like what would be a
mm-hmm.
red flag.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it is just, it's...
Mm-hmm.
just intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, it's worth mentioning that I don't have quite the same level of danger or threat as someone who's in the other conventional branches
right.
of the
right.
industry, because
right, right.
I'm pretty straightforward of, you're going to come and see me, and I'm very empowered, and I'm dominant, and you're probably going to be tied up at some point. So sexual predators aren't as likely to run into that. They're looking
right.
for more
right.
of the wounded gazelles
exactly.
as opposed to the lioness.
Yeah.
But really, it's just folks who come to me honestly and have taken the time to do the research. I'm not a lot more selective than
yeah.
that, as long as they don't, you know.
So you would
out.
Know right off the bat if somebody, you know, approached you and hadn't done his homework, and
mm-hmm.
you would just say, you know.
Oh, I asked straight out, have you been to my website?
Yeah.
Have you read over it? Or
mm-hmm.
if they're asking me questions that are clearly bullet pointed on
yeah.
my website,
yeah.
then they haven't gone there. And
mm-hmm.
then just general aspects of respect.
Yeah. Yeah. Say I was a rank amateur and I didn't have a clue about the correct vocabulary or subculture etiquette. I didn't know where to start, but I knew for certain that I had a sub streak and I wanted to investigate. Would you be somebody I could turn to?
Absolutely. It never ceases to amaze me, and I addressed it on my site of the actual question. I'm a complete newbie. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that
it isn't
core.
For everyone,
yeah.
You know, every pro, you know,
yeah.
It isn't. I mean, there are different levels, and
mm-hmm.
you know.
But specifically, why I do what I do mm-hmm. and who I am within my practice mm-hmm. as well as without, it's
mm-hmm.
the, I love seeing people that are just
yeah.
starting to
yeah.
to explore and knowing that I've contributed to, like, that momentous cherry-popping
yeah.
experience
yeah.
of where they
yeah.
go from here.
Yeah.
I don't have control over. What I do have control over is making sure that when they start on this path, that it's a good step, that they feel
good
solid and feel held in that. So I love, I really do. I enjoy being experienced players because then we can just get ridiculous with it. But
mm-hmm.
Seeing the newbies who, you know, don't have the verbiage or are
mm-hmm.
really insecure
mm-hmm.
or have never had an open conversation with anyone
right.
about this side of their sexuality or sexuality
right.
in general.
Right.
And then being able to create a place for them to do that.
I know.
I have a very good gift of getting people that constantly claim to be really shy to just blah, 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 blah.
How grand. I mean, talk about therapeutic. And, you know, it's the role of the priest or the priestess, is
mm-hmm.
it not? I mean, you know, in the real sense of those words,
mm-hmm.
to make that, you know, a place where people can explore and be at home with themselves.
And
okay.
very much like a priest or priestess, it's not that you don't have your belief in God or
mm-hmm.
the goddess, it's not
mm-hmm.
that you can't foster your own personal
mm-hmm.
relationship with that,
mm-hmm.
but going to someone who has invested their life and their livelihood
mm-hmm.
in an exploration of that connection.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you go to connect with,
exactly.
with that representative of your faith, is that this is someone that really gets it, lives it, breathes it,
mm-hmm.
and that you can go and you can have that shared experience. And
mm-hmm.
I can't
it can be a mentor even.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally. And it's not to say that people aren't sometimes bad mentors or bad priests or
right.
priestesses, but in general, you've got a safer shot of someone just being really open, and more than anything, they've heard your story before.
Yeah.
They don't
yeah.
know you, and you are a unique and special snowflake, but still, they've heard your story before, and it's
yeah.
not going to send them
yeah.
screaming. It's not going to send
yeah.
them calling for the guys with the sleeveless white jackets. It's
right.
it's acceptance.
In the little time that we have left, I'd like to turn our attention to an area of special interest to me as a therapist. I often hear from kinksters and pervs,
mm-hmm.
as well as your run-of-the-mill gay and lesbian folk, that they are often frustrated in their search for sex-positive and kink-positive healing and helping professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that you equally are attuned to this pressing concern, right?
Absolutely. I have the benefit of being connected to the community, so when I'm looking for any kind of professional,
mm-hmm.
you know, carpenter to therapist to gynecologist, I know who to go to ask. I know where there's lists of these are providers.
Mm-hmm.
I know where those kind of providers specifically advertise.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also comes down to if you wind up in a situation with someone who says they're totally fine working with kinky people or working with poly people or working with, you know, gay identified or trans identified
mm-hmm.
or lesbian identified or bisexual identified. If
and
you're not really feeling like someone's getting you, if you really feel like you're being disrespected,
mm-hmm.
you owe it to them and you owe it to yourself to say something
right.
and to not
and
let
not,
it slide.
Not paying to give somebody an education.
Correct. That information is out there.
Yeah.
If you know it, if other people can find it, they can find it. And
right.
again, if they have the word professional in front of whatever they're doing,
yeah.
they should be
yeah.
better about it. But especially for anyone in the therapeutic industry or the healing industry. And it can be challenging, but it is getting better.
Yeah.
And that's a lovely thing to see, that I think that there are folks like yourself, folks like me that are accessible to
mm-hmm.
professionals
mm-hmm.
that are looking to get an insight into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just comes being honest
yeah.
of this is your thing, and you're not going to apologize for
and
it.
And I've told people, you know, in other cities who have sought out my advice about this very thing, I said, well, maybe you should talk to somebody who, you know, a sex worker in your community, mm-hmm. someone like yourself, Catherine, who, you know, call them up and say, you know, I have this pressing issue. Would you have resources? Or would you know mm-hmm. somebody or where I could look for some help
yeah.
in this regard.
And I'm totally fine yeah. with that. And I actually, because of the amount of work that was going into the pre-session interview and over again of having that interaction with people who've never had this kind of conversation before and that mm. value of started offering just talk sessions,
yeah.
which is just
yeah.
come over and we'll just talk
yeah.
for an hour, which
yeah.
could be everything from
yeah.
this is where you should jump off to access the community to
right.
this is how you would have the best chance of success talking to your partner
right.
about your kinky interests.
Oh, how cool, yeah.
Just having that validation of,
yeah.
so you like to wear women's clothing,
mm-hmm.
rock on, that's
mm-hmm.
hot, there's nothing
mm-hmm.
wrong with that, let's
yeah.
put it into perspective,
mm-hmm.
let's get that perspective of someone who sees it on a regular basis
mm-hmm.
and gets to look behind the curtain and knows what's going
mm-hmm.
on. So it's something that I definitely, when I see people that are looking to try and solve problems that they have within their relationships, around sex or around opening it up to kinky activities, but especially if they're in a space of severe disconnection, which
yeah.
also often involves bed death, basically, two people that are in a union and aren't being sexy, aren't
mm-hmm.
being intimate, have even lost physical affection, of going to see a professional, of make sure when you find one that they are kink positive.
Exactly.
Because especially for a man going into a couples counseling situation, if you are honest about the, well, I'd really like her to be more dominant in the bedroom, or I'd really like her to tie me down and spank me or play with my butt.
Mm-hmm.
If you wind up with someone who is sex negative or kink paranoid, that, what you've just described, has nothing to do with the problems in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually your partner's response that's creating
right.
the conflict, but you might very well wind up with the blame.
That's right. Absolutely.
Which
I've seen it over and over again.
Oh,
please.
It's so frustrating. I want to non-consensually hit with stick to
all
the therapists that do that. It is so not okay.
So it is not okay. But since we have people like you in the community, and I'm so glad that we do, you are a treasure. You enrich Seattle. You make a difference. You are on the cutting edge. And I am grateful to be among your friends. I'm glad that we had this time to be together because been a long time.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming. and I know that there'll be other opportunities for us to chat together and possibly even with an audience.
Ooh.
So before we conclude, Catherine, would you give us your website address again and walk us around?
Again, that's pleasemistresscatherine.com. If you would like to come see me, as we've already mentioned, please read the website. You don't have to read the personal page or the reviews or the story page, though they're all really awesome. But definitely the frequently asked questions page and the contact page, which are the bare bones of this is how you would get to be into my glorious presence. And
it is glorious, ladies and gentlemen. My friend Catherine, thank you so much for all of your precious time. I appreciate it, and we are richer for the experience.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
How would you like to swallow one sandwich to knuckles?
Leave me alone. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, here's a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you like takes practice. Sure, you can learn to last longer simply by using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with a stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice, this puppy will help you last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with the Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills that you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old U.S. of A. Look for the Fleshlight and Fleshjack banners right there in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com.
I've got to talk to you privately.
Well, in just a moment, because the show's almost over. But speaking of sex toys, I want to take a moment to invite you to check out my adult products review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Now you can see what's hot and what's not in adult products. You can even find our reviews of several Fleshlight products. You'll find reviews of all sorts of adult goodies, sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, herbal products, fetish gear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Again, the address is DrDickSexToyReviews.com. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.